Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining for another hour to explore new realms of awareness. The motto of my show is getting empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible for your life. And isn't that what it's all about? It's learning, expanding, and it's getting more of the knowledge that can guide us. We all must make our own individual choices, but in order to do that, especially this day and age, we need to gather information that is really based on truth. So that is the purpose of the show, and I'm so glad you're here to join me for another fantastic experience. I know you'll really be quite enthralled with the topic that we'll be sharing today. And before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, especially for new listeners, to please go up to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. It is a website designed and dedicated to give you free information. I have free special reports. I have many ongoing programs. I post things. In fact, go over to my Facebook, which is What Women Must Know. I post on a daily basis. And this is really all about giving you the level of quality knowledge, quality education. So please take advantage of it. Just go opt in What Women Must Know, and you'll definitely get some amazing and impressive special reports, particularly on hormones at this point in time. So take advantage of learning and growing. And speaking of learning and growing, I have a really inspiring guest today. We're going to be talking about the power of plants for spiritual awakening. Now, I know this is probably not the topic you normally hear on the show, but what do you normally hear on the show? We have all sorts of experiences. And I have been really fascinated by the power that is found in nature. And in fact, designed by nature. We'll get into this in a little bit more when my guest is talking about his experiences. But, you know, the fact that we have every single cell of our body with receptor sites for these molecules found in plants to awaken us to our true divine nature. I mean, that just blows me away. Just like every single cell of our body has receptor sites for cannabinoids, the active ingredients in marijuana and hemp. I mean, who would have thought we were made to be together here? So what's going on? What's the story? What does it mean for us? And how can we understand and honor and appreciate the power of plants for our ongoing spiritual awakening? So, to help us on this journey today is my guest, Michael Sanders. He is a partner and vice president for clean energy startup called Sun Moon Energy and the vice president of Clear Media TV Advertising Agency. He is the author of a book that will be coming out very shortly, Ayahuasca and Executive Enlightenment, a revealing memoir designed to unlock your creative, intellectual, and spiritual potential. He is a passionate traveler, athlete, and mover. Michael practices sound nutrition, regular introspection, and daily meditation. He is also an avid Burning Man participant committed to fostering human connection and improving the world. And if you haven't heard about the Burning Man experience, I'm sure Michael will be telling you all about it. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you, Michael, to the show today.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you and your guest today, your audience.
Yeah, it's great having you. I just have to tell everyone that I, through my, you know, many sources on the internet, I read an article that you wrote about your experience in Peru and journeying with ayahuasca and the book that has come out of it, which is your book, Ayahuasca and Executive Enlightenment, and it just intrigued me. And I have I've been fascinated by the power of plants to open us up to our real divine nature, I guess you might want to call it. And that's why I kind of followed you and found you and invited you on the show, because I think your story is quite inspiring, and particularly how this journey has transformed you personally. personally. So why don't you kind of start at the beginning, fill us in a little bit about how you got to Peru, and then we'll talk about what happened there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so first off, I'm really happy that you found me through your channel. And to start, I'll go back to late 2012, and I was battling some really extreme fatigue at that time. I was working a lot, so I was the vice president of my advertising agency, which I still am. I was also working as a co-founder of a startup in the gaming industry, and I was training athletically and intensely about 14 times per week. And so really, I wasn't giving my body or my mind any time to rest and just sort of relax. And I got into this state where I would sleep for 12 hours a night, and it would feel as though I had just blinked my eyes shut and opened them, and that I had received no recovery whatsoever. So it was after dealing with that for a little while. I mean, I had no libido, no vigor for life. It was a pretty dark place, and I started to consult with a naturopath. So thank goodness they exist. And when I started working with him, he suggested that I start, for one, focusing more on play. So I was really regimented in my movement and athletic and work life. So he suggested that, you know, I be a little more free-flowing and sort of enjoy the moment a little bit more. And one of the biggest things he encouraged me to do was to adopt a meditation practice. And that has played a massive role in my life. So it's been about 2.5 years, and I've been meditating virtually every day since. So as I was recovering from this extreme fatigue, I ended up going to Burning Man in August of 2013. And for those who don't know, I'll quickly summarize it by saying that trying to describe it to someone who hasn't been there is like trying to explain a kaleidoscope to a blind person, because it's just the most transformative, magical, transcendent experience that I've encountered on planet Earth. And it's 70,000 people who congregate together in the desert of Nevada for 1 week. And there's all these principles of leave no trace. So there's not a single piece of garbage left by 70,000 people, which is a pretty impressive endeavor in and of itself. And these notions of radical inclusion, and this magical intersection of a variety of every demographic you can think of, ranging from vagabonds who panhandle all year just to afford the ticket to go there, to some of the world's most successful entrepreneurs like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and Larry Page. And when you get there, everyone is on the same wavelength. Everyone is of equal importance, and there's no hierarchy. So everybody's in it together, and each and every person is trying to enhance everyone else's experience just a little bit. And then the compounding effect of 70,000 people committed to that is truly transcendent, and really opened my eyes to human potential and what we're capable of accomplishing.
And I just want to say what also goes on at the Burning Man, which I have not been to, but I have watched documentaries about, is that it's a place where people create amazing art, living art, sculptures. I mean, it is the most amazingly creative, free, you know, a place where your imagination can run free, and people create amazing, huge experiences. And there's nothing like it in the world, especially because it's built out of this totally harsh desert with nothing, and then it comes to life and then disappears again.
Yeah.
It's all over.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, and yeah, those beautiful art experiential creations that you're referring to, they're the best and most incredible I've seen anywhere in the world. And everything that exists in the desert is temporary, because there is this notion associated with Burning Man, the idea of letting go and detachment. So most of the structures are actually lit on fire at the end, and it's this idea of impermanence and moving on and recognizing the beauty in the moment and not needing to hang on to it forever.
So that blew your mind. So that was the beginning.
Yeah, like Cheryl, I literally had my jaw dropped for 7 straight days, and I was asking myself, is this real? Like literally every single minute. And I'm not the only one. Everybody is going around in this virtual state
altered
of disbelief.
State.
So yeah, it's powerful. So anyways, and I mean, I could go on about Burning Man forever, but we'll jump ahead. And so when I returned home from the desert, one of my best friends, Sid, who I had gone to Burning Man with, he asked, "Hey, Mike, do you want to go down to Peru for New Year's and partake in these ceremonies with this psychedelic medicinal plant called ayahuasca?" And I had heard of ayahuasca about a year and a half prior on a Joe Rogan podcast. And he and Aubrey Marcus were talking about ayahuasca and how it was this truly powerful medicine and life-changing experience. And so when I first heard about it back then, I knew at some point I was going to embark on the journey to Peru to drink ayahuasca. I just didn't know when it would be. So then a year and a half later, here Sid was presenting me with an opportunity because his good friend Dan had been organizing expeditions throughout South America for the past 4 years and taking people to these ayahuasca ceremonies to, you know, show them whatever it is that they were looking for. And so I ventured down to Peru with two of my best friends, Sid and Carl, towards the end of 2013. And we were welcomed with open arms by Dan and his small group of people who facilitate the trip. And we trekked through the Amazon jungle for 6 days. And it was that was a magical experience, trekking through the Amazon. I had never been there before. And just the sheer size and prowess and power of that rainforest is absolutely mind-blowing. It seems infinite while you're down there because it is so vast. And there's such an incredible array of species. I mean, it's a lot different than the forest around here. I live in Toronto. And so, I mean, that in and of itself was just such a grounding experience, and never had I felt more connected with nature. And actually, so on New Year's Eve of 2013, that was the most grounded and peaceful I had ever felt in my entire life, just simply by being in such beautiful surroundings and with such wonderful people. And so it was on New Year's Eve of 2013 that we arrived at the ceremonial grounds, this small place down there called Nue Reo, and we were going to partake in our first of three ayahuasca ceremonies on that New Year's Eve. And I don't know, Cheryl, if you want me to jump into what that experience is like right now, or if you had any questions preceding that.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, when you talked about how you lacked the energy and felt in that really dark place, talking about how you were just pushing yourself to such, you know, to great demands on yourself through your work, through your exercise. You know, as a naturopath, what I hear is adrenal exhaustion. Yeah. So you had just, like, at such an early age, had burnt yourself out already.
Totally.
And, you know, if you didn't seek help from a naturopath who was very wise and got you on the healing path, you could have really been setting yourself up for chronic illnesses not too far down the track. It's kind of scary when we're so driven and so unaware. I mean, I think you probably realize now that you are living in this trance-like state, so disconnected from your real nature and your real purpose.
Totally. Yeah, I wasn't listening to my body at all. And one of my movement mentors, his name is Ido Portal, and I'm not sure if it's his original quote, but he says, "If you don't listen to your body's whispers, eventually it'll have to scream at you."
And exactly. And it was screaming.
Oh, it was screaming, Cheryl. Like, I literally could barely keep my eyes open.
Yeah,
and, it was interesting. My father's a specialist in internal medicine, so he's a physician, and I spoke with him, and he's just like, "Mike, you know, when he looks at my blood work and everything, it's all normal." He's like, "You might want to go see it." He's like, "You might want," and I've always had the notion, like, I don't want to be just normal and, like, where everything, you know, the way they measure blood work, it's not indicative of people's health necessarily. And so he suggested to me, he's like, "You know, this is beyond my area of expertise. You probably want to consult with a naturopath or a sports specialist or somebody like that." So it was good that he had the modesty and the humility to recognize that he didn't know how to help me in this situation, but that he could point me in the direction of someone who could.
Yeah, yeah. He was very wise to do that. At least he knew his limitations, and rather than send you off to more specialists.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, he and I talk about, like, healthcare in Canada, for example, because our government largely covers trips to the traditional MD, Western medical doctor, and he and I say that it's not healthcare, it's sick care. because it's all about intervention. And there are some preventative measures to it, but mostly it's just about intervening at a very late stage in something that has gone down a pretty, oftentimes a pretty horrible path by the time that they end up at a specialist.
You know, it reminds me of a woman in one of my seminars who went to her doctor and said, "I think I have adrenal exhaustion." And he said to her, "What's that?"
Yeah.
The state of affairs when you go to that traditional system with things that they just do not know anything about, and they can't address it other than put you on more drugs, which is not the answer.
That makes it even worse. And I find the understanding of nutrition in that field to be kind of shocking, like how little that they seem to care about it. And, you know, I understand that maybe that's not their role. They cover a different aspect of medicine and health, and that's why we have naturopaths who understand these other things. But I'm certainly one who's more inclined, at least for myself, to be visiting naturopaths because of the understanding of health that I have.
And there's one other comment I want to make, and then I'll let you continue with your fascinating story. And that is, you were you were young, you were following the culture, our culture's imperatives, succeed, achieve, do all those things, but you actually were missing the really essential spiritual foundation of your being. And it was a big wake-up call for you, getting into that place physically.
Totally. And I mean, the way I perceive life now is that, everything happens for a reason, and sometimes the darkest situations are the most teaching. So it was a lesson I had to learn, and I'm very grateful that I did. And I'll go into the first ceremony, and I'll describe to people what it's like, because
maybe explain what is ayahuasca and a little of that history with that plant.
Yeah, so ayahuasca, it's a vine that grows in the Amazon rainforest, and it's actually brewed with another plant called, in my case, chacruna leaves. And when brewed together, it becomes a psychedelic medicinal beverage that has been used by Peruvian shamans and the people down there for the last 10,000 years. And they use it for healing and divinatory purposes, so spiritual, physical growth. They use it to treat anything ranging from depression and anxiety to cancer and physical ailments. So a lot of Westerners have actually started to call it 30 years worth of psychotherapy in a cup. So it's really powerful when you think of doing that much psychotherapy work, let's say, in one night. It's very interesting because there have been a lot of anthropologists who have gone from North America and Europe to study how the people of Peru have been using these medicines. And they'll ask the shamans, they'll say, "How did you come across these plants? And how did you know how to administer them in this way? And how did you know how to brew them for between 48 and 72 hours to yield this medicinal beverage?" And the shamans would say, "Oh, well, the plants told us." And then, so from our Western perspective, I mean, that comment is met with skepticism, or at the very least interprets that comment as a metaphor. And so they would ask the shamans again, like, how did you actually come across these plants? Like, who told you, or how did it come about? And then the shamans would say, the plants told us. Like, how do you think we found two plant species out of the billions that exist in the Amazon rainforest, and then somehow through trial and error deduced that we had to brew it between 48 and 72 hours? Like, no, it was not trial and error. We were told by the plants. And there's this notion down there, and I think one that's spreading to the rest of the world, is that plants have a number of functions. One, just to exist and grow and everything, but in terms of humans, they can serve as plant medicine, so they can heal our ailments, and two, as plant teachers. So the Peruvian people have this connection with plants whereby they communicate with them on a conscious level. And I recognize that it might sound foreign to a lot of listeners, but it is something that they're very accustomed to, and it's not out of the ordinary. And when you speak with anybody down in Peru about communicating down with plants, whether or not they do it personally, they're very familiar with the concept and accepting that it is possible and it is true. And, I mean, I going down there myself, I was skeptical of this notion that a plant, I could communicate consciously with a plant. And, I mean, so to embark on an ayahuasca ceremony, you're supposed to follow a specific diet that avoids all salt, spices, sugar, sex, orgasm, alcohol, drugs, and basically you end up eating chicken, white fish, rice, and some vegetables. And I mean, I've always been a very mindful and healthy eater, so I was skeptical of the claims that I needed to, you know, eliminate spices from my diet, for example, or eliminate other forms of fish and other forms of meat, because I didn't understand it scientifically, and I thought, you know, I don't see how this is going to help my experience. But I decided if I'm going to fly all the way to Peru and go on this journey, that I should certainly remain open-minded enough to respect their customs and to go in it, to go all in with it. So I did, and I followed that diet. And then on the night of New Year's Eve, we had our first ayahuasca ceremony, and it was around 8 p.m. and we're in this maloca. So it's essentially a wooden structure that's situated in the middle of the jungle. It's built like a dome, and it has screen windows, and there are no lights in it, so you're in the darkness of the jungle. And the shaman, his name was Hermogenes, he poured me this beverage, which is, it's like a murky brown liquid. And then he handed it to me, and I drank it. And a lot of people say that it doesn't taste great. And I mean, it's not something you would seek out for its flavor alone, that's for sure. But it tastes sort of like a green shake without any berries in it. So it's bitter, but it's not horrible, in my opinion. And anyways, I drank this medicine. And so with each ayahuasca ceremony, the shamans recommend that you go into it with an intention, something that you want to work on, something that you want help with. And so I had two intentions in my first ayahuasca ceremony. Number one being that the startup I mentioned earlier, it was called I Wager That. It was in the gaming industry. And I had been working on it and hadn't achieved the success I had hoped it would have by that point. So I was asking the ayahuasca, is the startup's lack of success a fear I need to overcome? And do I need to push harder and make this thing a reality? Or is its lack of success my intuition telling me that this startup isn't the right fit for me? And then my second intention was to retrain some neuromuscular pathways in my body, because I was experiencing some discomfort in the left side of my back, and I had been for years. And I just assumed it was some former athletic injury that had never fully recovered, and I actually thought it was just more the memory of the injury that I was remembering rather than there being anything structurally or anatomically compromised. So those were my two tensions, one regarding my startup and two regarding my body. And so after I drank the ayahuasca, I sat down in a meditative pose, and because it was New Year's Eve, I decided to reflect upon my year of 2013. And to do so in a chronological meditative form. Because I'm experienced with other psychedelics, namely psilocybin mushrooms and LSD, so I didn't want to just be sitting there waiting for it to come on. So I wanted to be sort of active in what I was doing. So I'm sitting there meditating, and I get to about the month of October in my meditation, and then I feel this warm fire shoot up the right side of my body. And it's a really powerful feeling, and I just think, and instinctively and intuitively, I say in my head, I sort of broadcast telepathically to the world around me, I say, Mother Ayahuasca, will you please give me 5 more minutes as I finish my reflection upon my year of 2013? I think it's important that I do so, and I just like a few more minutes. And then, Cheryl, I feel this voice telepathically respond, yes, my child, take your time and let me know when you're ready. And then the fire recedes down my arm, and then I sort of scratched my head to the left and the right, like looking for this voice. And I thought to myself, holy shit, I'm talking with a plant right now. Because that was something that I did not anticipate, right? So then and now I'm really excited to engage with the ayahuasca. So I finished my reflection upon 2013, and then again, instinctively and telepathically, I broadcast, okay, Mother Ayahuasca, I finished my reflection. I'm ready to welcome you into my body and into my soul. And I'm open to being shown whatever it is that you want to show me. I want to learn whatever it is that you want to teach me, and maybe you'll even learn something from me. So welcome. And just so all the listeners know, like, this wasn't language that I expected I would be saying to a plant, and these weren't terms that I typically use. I had typically used in my day-to-day life. I never considered myself a spiritual person, for example. And so after I welcomed her into my body, I feel this fire rise up my arm again, and then it covers and fills my entire body, this powerful, powerful fire. And then off in the distance from the darkness, I see these purple and green beams of light start waving. And they look like aurora borealis, like the northern lights. And they start flowing towards me. And I'm staring at them with a dropped jaw because I'm in this dome in the middle of the jungle, and suddenly there are northern lights inside of it. And so I'm doing all these little tests. I'm closing and opening my eyes, and I'm looking away to see, are these lights in the physical space? Are they somewhere else? Am I hallucinating this? Like, what is happening right now? And so I actually, when I would close my eyes, the vibrancy of the lights would intensify compared to when my eyes were open. So then I decided to look away for a while, to look to my left and see what would happen. And so I looked away for about 30 seconds, and then by the time I shifted my gaze back to where the lights were, they had actually traversed closer to me, and they were headed towards me. And so they were acting like the same way a cloud floats through the sky. It moves regardless of whether or not I'm looking at it. And so these purple and green beams of light then wrap themselves around me, and they're covering me, and I look down, and I'm covered in northern lights. And, I mean, my mind is just blown right now. And I feel this incredible maternal presence, and then the beams of light turned me over onto my left side into the fetal position. And Cheryl, it was the most powerful maternal presence and, like, comforting feeling I've ever experienced, and no discredit to my own mother, but this is the greatest mother I've ever encountered. And so I felt this just incredible, comforting feeling, and I was actually thinking I might doze off to sleep right now because this is so peaceful. And as I was about to shut my eyes, one of the shamans, his name's Mohanek, he started singing, and the shamans sing these songs called Ikaros, which are designed to guide drinkers of the plant medicine through their experience. And the shamans actually say that the Ikaros are not of their own creation, but rather that they channel the songs from higher dimensions and from the ayahuasca plant spirit. Again, something that I had no idea what they were talking about when they first said that to me. But so Hermógenes starts singing, and there are these powerful rhythmic tunes, and they sort of sound like soa, soa, wah, wah. But they have much better singing voices than I do. And so as he's singing, these orange and blue shapes start emanating from his mouth and filling my perceptual field. So they start filling the maloka that I'm inside. And the shapes are dancing to the rhythm of his sounds. And again, my jaw's dropped and my mind's blown, and I'm just staring at these shapes thinking, like, what the hell is going on? How is this happening? And again, opening and closing my eyes to test their objectivity, to test their reality. And then the next shaman, the main shaman, his name's Ricardo, he starts singing a song, and these red, purple, and green shapes start emanating from his mouth and expanding from his mouth and filling the perceptual field, and his shapes start interacting and combining with Hermógenes' orange and blue shapes, together combining to create this auditory and visual symphony, like all of it harmonizing together in this fascinating new realm that I had never been exposed to. And then the final shaman, the only female shaman, her name's Ursilia, she starts singing, and a full spectrum of colors just explodes from her mouth. And Cheryl, there were more colors than I've ever seen before. There are more colors than are in the rainbow, so I don't have names for them. And they started combining with the other two shaman shapes, all of them, again, harmonizing and creating this beautiful song and creating this massive cloud-like entity that I was recognizing in this moment and receiving all of this telepathic communication, that I was being shown a new dimension, a dimension that I was not previously conscious of, and sort of access to something beyond the regular waking three dimensions that we exist in as humans. And it's certainly not privy to me. It's not exclusive to my experience. So many other people who have gone down to Peru and had these experiences recognize the same thing. Every one of them, or almost every one of them, claiming its objectivity. So it's not a hallucination. You're actually being shown something that you're just not aware of. And I like to sort of make the comparison to the fact that we have the electromagnetic spectrum, of which humans see 1% of visible light. Other animals see all sorts of, they perceive the world in totally different ways. Bats perceive the universe through sonar, so their perception of the universe is radically different than ours and probably has next to no resemblance to how we see things. And that electromagnetic spectrum is only one spectrum that we know of. There could be infinite other spectrums, infinite other layers, infinite other dimensions. So to think that these sorts of things aren't possible, I think, is a closed-minded on people's part. But in my experience, it was what I was being shown was entirely objective. And then, so as I'm sort of looking at this space, these three, what I ended up calling humanoid spirits, floated into the right side of my perceptual field. And they were each about 3 feet tall, all three of them female. One, they had these black bodies with cloaks on, and they looked like little humans. And one was outlined in this vibrant pink color. Another was outlined in a vibrant yellow, and another was outlined in a vibrant orange. And all three of them were just so open, and they were showering me with love. And here I am sitting in the jungle in the Amazon, now engaging with spirits of different dimensions that were so powerfully there. And again, I was still, my mind, my ego was not fully willing to accept this. So again, I was closing my eyes and trying to see whether or not they were real. And then I would look to the left and hold my gaze over there for a while. And I spent about 30 seconds looking away from these spirits. And then they floated from the right side of my perceptual field to the left side. And they were sort of telepathically saying to me, like, hey, don't you want to know what we have to share? Don't you want to interact with us? And then I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess I might as well interact with the spirits of other dimensions that are presenting themselves to me for the very first time. And so, and again, they were just showing me love. And I actually had this strange notion, because at the time I had a girlfriend living back home in Toronto, and I wasn't sure if I was committing some act of infidelity, because this love was so powerful and real. But then, and they, the spirits of this dimension were cognizant of the fact that I was questioning this and whether it was an act of infidelity. And then they assured me that, no, this is fine. Like, we're sort of like a grandmotherly, sisterly, maternal type of love. So it's not sexual. Like, don't worry about that. So I was like, okay. So I kept communicating with them. They're showing me love. And then I saw this another spirit floated into my perceptual field. And he had a horse's head, and he had a very vibrant red outline. And he was communicating to me this brotherly, grandfatherly, best friend sort of love. And again, just opening up and telepathically communicating it with me. And just so everyone knows, like, all of the communication in this realm is telepathic. It's beyond language. And I like to use the analogy of, let's say you were trying to describe what the feeling of falling in love is like to your best friend. Now, you can, if he hasn't had that feeling, then you can explain it to him all you want. You can use all the words that are in your vocabulary, and he might be able to intellectually wrap his head around it. But he can't feel that feeling of falling in love unless he himself has experienced it. But then imagine if you weren't limited to your language, and you could actually take your experience of falling in love and plant that inside of him and put it inside of him so that he could actually experience it. Well, then you've communicated to him the notion of falling in love. And that's what all of the communication in this realm is like. So after I was communicating with this other spirit that had a horse's head, I interacted with these spirits that looked like mitochondria, and they were glowing different colors. So like the mitochondrial drawings from your biology class textbooks in high school, they looked like that. And then I was communicating with spirits that looked like plants, others that looked like serpents and various animals, others that were shapes I have no name for because I hadn't seen them ever before in my life. And each one of these spirits was communicating to me love, each one a different articulation of love, collectively expressing love as a whole, and showing me that the fabric of our universe is love, and that it's the creative force behind all things. I mean, it's fairly evident that, you know, just giving birth to a child as a human, I mean, that's the sexual experience is an act of love, and that's creative, but that sort of creative force extends in all dimensions and in all directions. And that's the driving force behind all things, and that's what's responsible for the Big Bang and all of its predecessors and everything beyond that. So that notion and being shown it to a way that was, being shown it in a way that was unquestionable was obviously one of the best and most important experiences of my life. And then, interestingly, especially for your audience, Cheryl, is that as I was navigating this realm, I started, so there was this massive cloud-like entity I was looking into. It was sort of like a portal to a new dimension. But then from below that cloud-like entity and from my body, I saw my gut flora and the bacteria inside of my digestive tract float up into this new spiritual realm. And they sort of looked like, if anybody remembers those Furby toys back in the day, they looked like these little white Furby-like balls of fur, essentially. And they were all happy, and most of them were white. And interestingly, I would see some brown ones mix in, which was representative of, you know, the excrement brewing in my intestines. And these spirits were communicating to me that my body is not just my own, but rather it's a vessel for billions, if not trillions, of different spirits. And that in order to, and as you know, Cheryl, I mean, you know, the bacteria inside of you influences your thoughts, your moods, your behavior. I mean, the gut is our second brain, and who knows, arguably it might even be our first brain, really. And so they were showing me that you need to make your environment, your body, as welcoming to positive spirits as you possibly can. And it was really reassuring for me, because in that moment they were telling me, you know, like your path that you're on with regards to your newfound play and movement and your nutrition, the way you're eating, and your new mindset, like these are all great things. So keep going with that, because you're making this an increasingly welcoming place for positive spirits. Whereas back in the day, when you were driving yourself into the ground, you weren't. It was a difficult place to live in. So that was a really interesting experience to have from a health perspective. And so now, as I'm navigating these realms, there's all sorts of different things happening, and I'm sort of just scratching the tip of the iceberg here, but I'll get into the first intention that I had that was with respect to my startup, which I think is probably related to the article that you read, Cheryl. Mm-hmm. And so I felt the ayahuasca sort of guiding me towards my intention and saying, okay, let's focus on this now. And I said, okay, so how do I... What about this startup? Is it a fear I need to overcome, or is it intuition saying that it's not the right fit for me? And then at that moment, I see this man made of porcelain, white in color, no hair, completely bald, and he punches his arms up through a swamp and then punches his arms out to the side, and then just he shackles all of this skin in these chains. And then he punches his arms up and punches his arms out to the side, and he shackles more skin and more chains as he travels up through another swamp. And then he explodes up through a third swamp and punches his arms up and out to the sides, shackling more chains and more skin. And he does this 10 times through 10 different swamps. And the whole time I'm hearing, I wager that, the name of my startup, and receiving all of this communication that's saying to me, just shed it, let it go. You've put 2 years into it, but the reason it's not successful is because it's not you. The only reason you're in it is due to the potential financial upside, and that's not enough to bring it to fruition. Like, even though it's a good idea, it's not what you're passionate about, so just walk away from it. And so I felt this incredible sense of liberation, because it was something that I had invested a lot of time of, that I felt attached to, that I felt like I couldn't walk away from. But then here I was, this moment of intense clarity. I was like, oh, like, yeah, I'm free to do whatever I want. So at that moment, I decided, okay, I'm walking away from that startup. And then I decided to ask, okay, well, if I'm walking away from that, what am I going to do? Because while I am the vice president of my advertising agency, I absolutely love the people I work with. I love the clients who I can help tell their stories. I know that I want to be doing something more than that. Something, I feel this yearning in my soul for something beyond that. And so I asked the ayahuasca, okay, what should I do? And she said, okay, Mike, you've always been passionate about storytelling. You're gifted with it. And you've always wanted to be a writer since you were a kid, so start writing. And I thought, okay, yeah, that sounds easy enough, but, I mean, if I knew how to make a living out of writing, I'd already be doing it. And then the ayahuasca assured me, don't worry about the finances, you're fine for now, just start writing, and then good things will happen, and it'll evolve, and it'll expand, so just start writing, that's all you have to do. And again, this profound sense of clarity that, okay, all I have to do is put pen to page or start typing on my computer and then just see where it goes. I just need to make a committed effort to that writing. And then the ayahuasca said, and sort of like in this winking manner, said, and I'm giving you a lot to write about. And I said, yes, you certainly are. So It was actually the ceremony goes on and on for, this is just the first ceremony too. I'm probably only about an hour and a half to the first ceremony, and the first one was 4 hours, and then there were two more that lasted 6 hours apiece. But immediately following that first ceremony, well, I actually dozed off to sleep for about 5 hours, and I woke up at 6 a.m. with this burning desire to write. And so I grabbed my pen and my journal, and I headed over to this miniature Maloka, so this smaller dome that was situated on the jungle's edge. Inside of it was filled with all of this ayahuasca-inspired art. Much of it looked like Pandora from Avatar, and which is my favorite film, so that was pretty synchronous. And so I sat down and started writing. And what I thought would have been the most challenging experience to ever try to articulate in words, to ever find the words to say, was so effortless. And it felt like sort of some celestial waterfall was in the sky and pouring down through my body and soul, out my arm, through the pen, and just spewing words onto the page. And you know when you're writing how sometimes like a thought will escape you, or you just can't get the words out properly? I mean, that didn't happen once. It was just so effortless. And I wrote pen to page for 8 consecutive hours, first time doing so in years, since I always write on my laptop. Hand was cramping, like the muscles in it were failing, but it just kept going. And then after 50 pages, I put down a period, and I closed the journal and thought to myself, holy shit, I got it. Like, I got the experience. And then at that moment, they shut off the electricity on the ceremonial grounds for the evening to call it a night. And it was like this perfect alignment and synchronicity. And I'm like, okay, so that's what I'm supposed to be doing, I can tell. And then after the second ceremony, a similar writing experience, a third ceremony similar, and then I've spent the last 18 months now working on this book, and it's now just finished the crowdfunding campaign for its publication, and we actually hit 200% of the goal, so people are really resonating with it, and so it'll be in print in early August, which I'm obviously really excited about and just excited to share with the world.
So, and out of this journey, and I mean, this is so profound, Michael, it's just like, you know, the veil was lifted and you had a direct experience of the true nature of who you are, and that there's so much more going on here than just going to work every day and struggling to make a living. This is the Matrix, which is my favorite movie. This is the Matrix we live in, that world of power and control that really causes us to lose sight of who we really are. So You changed your direction. You changed your startup, right? You started a new company. And what other changes happened for you as a result of this awakening? This is how you had this amazing experience of reconnecting with your true self. People do it in different ways. We don't need plant medicine. I had a spontaneous awakening myself many years ago, which just opened up, you know, like literally woke up one morning. There are many ways, but the point is that these are as varied as we are in this, you know, multiplicity of the universe, so there are experiences that we draw to ourselves to wake us up into our true nature. So tell us how else have you been transformed through this experience of really connecting with who you really are?
Right. So, yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, and it's an understanding that continues to evolve for me, is the recognition that all I have to do is be myself and be my true self, and then everything else just seems so much more effortless. I mean, I spent my whole life sort of with this serious mentality and thinking these certain things needed to be accomplished, so everything was very full of effort and trial. And since that time, everything's been very free-flowing, and just it feels so natural to me. I'm just being who I really am. And things like my movement practice, for example, it's now much more intuitive. It's it's largely focused on play, and I don't worry if, you know, I miss a workout or I don't feel like working out, because I'm like, that's fine. I dance a lot more. I've loved dancing for the last number of years, but now I dance almost every day, and I find that a really just a transcendent experience each and every time I do it. I've recognized sort of the healing nature of sound and music and why I've always been so drawn to it. the ayahuasca deepened my connection with nature to a level that it was previously not at, and that informs my professional life. And I mean, so I had the opportunity to become a partner in a startup, Sun Moon Energy, where our goal is to evolve humanity onto clean energy and heal our planet. So that's a large shift in my professional direction, because I mean, I've always cared about the environment, but I never really thought I could do anything about it. But then I had this realization, well, of course you can do something about it if you care about it. Like, who else? I mean, it's not as though anyone else in this world is more special than you are, is more capable or more intelligent than you are. We all have the opportunity to make a big positive impact on the world. So it was this recognition that in each and every decision I make, I'm trying to make the biggest positive impact on the world that I can. And that informs the way I live my life, which again makes it more effortless and free-flowing, because it's just this guiding principle that sort of puts everything into focus and sort of allows me to understand what's truly important. My friendships have deepened. My relationships with my family members have improved. I learned a lot in the ayahuasca realm. She was showing me things about how to treat and interact with my mother, my father, and my brother, for example. And that has enhanced all of my relationships with those family members, and similarly with friends. And it's also afforded me, I recognize that prior to this experience, for example, the women I would fall in love with, who are all incredible people, but I would become sort of addicted to them. And I guess at some point, I never wanted to be dependent upon them, but at some point there was sort of a level of dependency. And when we would split up, there were these like withdrawal symptoms, essentially, so like akin to addiction. And now I have this understanding of, I heard Osho, this Osho quote recently, just talking about how when the other leaves, it doesn't take away any of your happiness because they weren't the one who gave you your happiness. And that's where I'm at now, where I'm just perfectly content in and of myself, recognizing that I am enough. And that, so if a woman I love comes in and out of my life, that's totally fine. And I'm just grateful and thankful for the experience. So also my nutrition has changed, because for the last 6 or 7 years, I've been a quote-unquote paleo eater. And I used to just have this notion that a while back that I needed to be eating really low carbohydrate and eating just a ton of meat all the time. And I actually thought that veganism was a silly notion, and I thought that they were missing all these nutrients and everything. And while I'm not a vegan, like I still eat meat, my amount of meat consumption has decreased drastically, because I'm just listening to my body, and it's intuitively telling me you don't need nearly as much meat as you were eating before. So some days, you know, I don't have any meat at all. And I've been eating a lot less food, actually, as well, because there was a time in my life when I was training a lot, I was eating probably 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day. And now it's honestly, it's probably between 1,500 and 2,500 if I were to measure it, which is so much less, but I just feel my body not asking me for any more than that. And yet I maintain a very lean and muscular, strong and athletic physique, and I feel even better. So it's clearly working for me. So yeah, the whole spiritual awakening has led to a lot of changes. I mean, I also recognize that I want to help others and inspire others as much as I can, and that I should just continue focusing on storytelling and helping people that way. So yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of things that have come from that experience, and they're forever evolving, right? Like none of it's static. So I feel as though each and every day is a new opportunity to grow, and it just continues in this magical direction.
You know, isn't that the journey we are all seeking? Isn't that, you know, that place of peace and purpose and self-worth that you achieved on this journey and are making choices in your life to enhance? Isn't that really what we are all wanting and seeking in whatever way we do it? But that's really what everyone on this planet is yearning for. And it's just finding the path that will lead us there, because that's the only place that can bring us a true sense of well-being and health and happiness. There's a movie that was made that took a group of sick people into the jungles somewhere, I'm not sure where, but they were into the jungles of South America, and they were way in the jungles, and they all had chronic illnesses, and they were taught or attended to by the shaman there, and they each had different medicines. Some of them were given ayahuasca, some of them were given other medicines, and they all had awakenings. Some of them were totally healed, some of them improved, and there's one person that actually had advanced cancer, died, but died in a place of real peace and well-being in the jungles. We're all on this journey of finding ourselves, and you're so blessed, Michael. You had this amazing experience. So I want to ask you a couple of questions in the time we have left.
Sure.
People in our culture are really afraid of drugs, or let's just call, and we'll call this plant medicine. It's not, it's, mm-hmm. I think it's more accurate, plant medicine. So what about the question people have? Well, can you get addicted to this? You know, do you want to keep doing ayahuasca yourself? You know, what is your response to those kinds of concerns people have?
First off, I don't think it's addictive. I haven't encountered anyone who has been addicted to it. It's not necessarily an enjoyable experience. Like I was going through a lot of what I described was very enjoyable and very awakening, but there were also moments where I was doing a lot of purging. So whether it was through diarrhea or tears or yawning, a lot of people vomit and they'll recognize that they're purging their fear. Because you fast for about 8 hours or more leading into ceremony, so there's nothing inside of your stomach for you to throw up, and yet people often puke up this thick black sludge, and they recognize it as their fears and insecurities. So those experiences aren't necessarily that enjoyable, and rather than feeling as though you need to do it again and again, you're shown a lot there, but then the real work, you know, you have to implement it into your life. So it's not. It's not something that you just want to go do recreationally. It sort of fundamentally changes the way you perceive your life and the universe, and then allows you to head in a direction that's more in tune with your true being.
The other thing that I just want to say, there's a lot of interest in ayahuasca right now, mm-hmm. and there are people doing it all over the world, bringing that plant in, I guess. What your experience really highlighted was the necessity, I believe, of having a shaman, someone who has been trained to guide people on this journey. It's not just brewing up some ayahuasca and going off in your own little thing. It's really the ritual and the preparation and the guidance by people who are deeply connected to this process.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what they devote their lives to, right? So I would not even entertain the idea of drinking without a shaman. That being said, I actually have no intention of drinking the plant medicine again, because I feel like I've been shown the lessons that I needed to be shown, and that I now need to move forward with them. And that if I were to go back to the ayahuasca, I imagine she would say to me, "Hey, like, what are you doing here? We already talked about this. Like, go on your journey." And and that's not to say that, you know, 5 years down the road or 10 or 20 that I might not feel the calling towards it again. But for now, I see no future ayahuasca experience in the foreseeable future. So, yeah, Cheryl, absolutely. I think the shaman is an integral part of the experience, because these realms I was describing, they were so foreign to me, and I imagine they'd be so foreign to most first-time drinkers, that it could definitely be very difficult to navigate or overwhelming, and it's nice to have somebody there who can guide you through it. And it's interesting because these shamans can see what your experience. For example, that spirit I alluded to earlier who had a horse's head, in my mind I called him Centurion. And afterwards, one of the shamans asked me the next day, he said, "Hey, you know that that spirit you saw that you named Centurion with the horse's head?" And I said, "Yes." And then he's like, "Well, we call him Centaur. We're very familiar with him." And I was just like, okay, like, that's good to know. I cannot believe you were able to see that. So, I mean, they're in tune with a level of reality that we aren't necessarily, and that's not to say that we can't become as in tune with it as they are, but they have, at least the ones I worked with, devoted decades to this practice and through helping people, and that's their entire mission, is to help people through this plant medicine. And what's also wonderful about it is that they're not indoctrinating like many of the religious dialogues I've encountered, or the way that institutionalized religion often operates. You know, you sort of have to buy into it, and there's this whole notion of fearing God and things of that nature. But in this realm, they actually don't try to tell you anything. They just show you this realm and say, yeah, take what you want from it.
Well, this has been so fascinating for me. I also want to tell people, I recently watched a documentary on Netflix called The DMT Molecule. I think I mentioned it in the beginning of the show, which is when they've analyzed the ayahuasca plant, it has this molecule called DMT that is found. Mm-hmm. There are receptor sites for it throughout every single cell of our body, which I find so amazing.
Yeah.
So people may want to watch that documentary called The DMT Molecule.
I think it's actually called the Spirit Molecule, Cheryl.
Oh, the Spirit Molecule.
Spirit Molecule.
Was it DMT and the Spirit Molecule? Is that is it DMT? Spirit Molecule?
Yeah.
Thank you. So, which is really interesting because it was the research done by all these, highly regarded scientists, and they, talking about the experience of working with that molecule. Well, Michael, we're at the end of our show. It's been a great trip. I feel like I've, kind of journeyed with you in many ways. And can you tell us the website so people can learn more about what you're doing and your book, the Ayahuasca and Executives Enlightenment, I love the title. What would be the best website to send them to?
Okay, yeah, so it's going to be Micro Macrocosms. And I'll send you the link to that, Cheryl, because I'm actually, by the time this show is released, it'll be up and live, but I'm still determining the dot, whether it'll be .com or .co.
Okay.
Or people can find me at facebook.com/author Michael Sanders, where there's all the updates and everything about the book. So, yeah, those would be the best two places to find me.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your sharing with us today, and the inspiration, Michael, for what you've been through and how it's altered your life and the purpose you found. So you've been an inspiration for all of us. Thank you for the wonderful journey you are on, and all the best with the book. I know amazing things will be opening up in your life, more than you have ever imagined.
Well, thank you so much, Cheryl, and it was a pleasure having the opportunity to interact with you and your audience. So, again, thank you.
You're very welcome. To all of you listening, I'm sure you found this a really entertaining and inspiring conversation. And remember, always honor...